Santa Devlantes and Matt Bubala in for Bob and Marianne here on 720 WGN, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Spring is going to be here soon.
It's soon. It's close. You just know it because it just can't take any longer to get here.
Do you promise?
I'm not Tom Skilling, but I just feel like, come on, this has been the most brutal winter ever.
It has. We'll talk about that more coming up on the show. Right now, we want to go talk a little bit more about the Malaysia Airlines accident. I hesitate to say crash because we still don't know exactly what in the world happened. But now lawsuits are starting to come out, and a Chicago area firm, Ribic Law, is suing Boeing. They're suing Malaysia Airlines, and we want to find out a little bit more about that. Joining us on the phone right now from Clifford Law Offices is Bob Clifford himself. Thanks for being with us, Bob.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you? Hi, Anna.
Hi, Bob.
Nice to talk to you, friend.
You too. You know, I have so many questions for you. I don't know what we'll have time for, and if people listening would like to have questions for you. I know you've been in these situations before.
Sure.
Well,
let me start with what I've been saying. It was grossly premature for this action to be filed. The fact of the matter is that there's no evidence whatsoever that's available to suggest that Boeing or a component part manufacturer of Boeing is responsible for the cause of this crash. And the disservice it does to the families is significant because it gives them hope. It lets them start to think that some judge in Chicago, Illinois, is going to force Boeing to come forward with information that will relieve their angst and agony over what has happened to their family members. And it's just not right. And amazingly to me, and more importantly as well, most of the aviation bar across the globe, they filed this petition in the Circuit Court of Cook County. These cases will never, if they ever come to America, be in the circuit courts. They'll be in the federal courts. And they did this same publicity stunt in the Asiana crash, and that was thrown out last August. So in the press release announcing their filing, they say this is the same procedure that we utilized in the Asiana crash. Yes, it is. And the courts here threw it out. So it's, you know, I'm being very critical about this, as well as my colleagues in the aviation litigation bar are, because it's just something that shouldn't have been done. It's very premature. And, this is the kind of thing that makes lawyers look bad. I mean, we look bad enough already.
Yeah, you don't need help for that, right? Nor do journalists either. But, what's interesting is, just backtracking a little bit, this law firm that supposedly is representing nearly half of the victims on board this aircraft is operating under the theory that this plane has, in fact, crashed. Is there any legal reason? Is there anything in the court of law why you would want to make that assumption or make that case?
The answer is a resounding no. And very interestingly, and you mentioned that I should have said it the first time, it's also reported that the person for whom they claim to represent denied being the actual father of the claimed deceased, individual, and instead is an uncle, which is not a proper party plaintiff under any circumstances. The reality is that the world assumes that there was a crash. And certainly all of the data coming out within the last 24 hours with all these debris sightings suggests that. But until you really know, you don't know. And more importantly, it's going to take years of analysis to really, if at all, know what happened here. That's why one of the things that I've been talking about, based on the experts that we deal with, is this what's called deployable technology. That it's like an iPad strapped to the side or pasted to the side of a wing or a tail, that under certain profiles it ejects and it survives. It floats. It's findable. It streams satellite data that's immediately available. We wouldn't have had this massive hunt for a haystack, let alone trying to find the needle in the haystack.
Bob, that's what I found so interesting about your op-ed piece, is because you clearly outlined two very reasonable in terms of price pieces of technology that would have by now provided the answers to these relatives, these people living in pain and angst, and only we can imagine what they're going through, wanting to know what happened. These two pieces of technology very reasonable for the airline industry, could have solved that. The deployable recorder, you just said, would actually jettison from the plane upon impact. It floats, and it lets you know their position, right?
Correct.
The other thing was the asset tracker. Tell us about that. Less than 100 bucks.
It's less than 100 bucks. It's called Spot, and it's a global trace system that's currently used for fancy cars. It's used for boats. It's used for people. It costs $100 to buy and $150 a year to maintain. And, you know, one of the things that the engineers will tell you, the avionics engineers, is that the industry on both sides, the manufacturing side and the purchasing side, doesn't get motivated to do anything in the absence of what they call gravestone or tombstone engineering. And that is to say, you know, we don't have Pintos today in America because people died. And we are safer as a society because so many people have died under certain circumstances. And the same is true in aviation in safety improvement. The safety improvements are not implemented because they cost money to implement. And even though these numbers are very small, if you talk to the number of crunchers in these industries, especially the aviation industry, the slightest added cost multiplied out by the what it costs them on an industry-wide basis, they say no to that. I mean, these people are so fuel conscious that, you know, they want to restrict weight in order because weight consumes fuel. And it's just that's how the industry goes. I mean, you know, I just resolved several of the Colgan crash cases in Buffalo, New York. They were stalled for a long time in a bankruptcy. We resolved them within the last 2 weeks in federal court in Buffalo, New York. And there you had the pilots who were fatigued. They were overworked. They were underpaid. They were poorly trained. And, you know, the programs, the training programs are better now. You hear talk about paying pilots more. You hear talk about mandatory rest time for pilots. In the absence of these things, you know, sticking out because somebody died, they just don't happen. There's no motivation for the industry to do it.
Well, Bob, I think there's a lot of different pieces of technology that have been talked about endlessly the last few weeks on the cable news networks that could be upgraded, could be changed, but everybody's arguing over cost and what's really needed. I'm sure we'll see a lot of that. Going back to the lawsuit for just a second,
yeah.
A lot of times we hear in these lawsuits about preserving evidence and things like that, and that's why a lawsuit would be announced early. Does that make sense in this case at all? Is there worry about evidence?
It makes sense as a general proposition. It does not make sense in this case because this court in Chicago does not have jurisdiction over Malaysia Airlines. This judge is not going to have jurisdiction over Boeing. This case, I predict that these pleadings will be stricken, and if they're not stricken, they'll be immediately removed to the federal court where they'll be stricken. You know, it's very common. You just saw it in this recent CTA case. There was a lawsuit filed to preserve evidence, and there's merit in my mind to that because it's a local thing, that there's ready control over operative facts, whether it's videotape or whether it's 911 calls, because, you know, those things aren't preserved forever. And in the absence of a court order requiring preservation, they're not. That's really not a fair process to use when you're dealing with an international incident that's being investigated by literally dozens investigative bodies from throughout the globe, whether it's Australia, China, Malaysia, the United States, Australia. So, you know, it's just this is, in my opinion and that of others, a publicity stunt, pure and simple.
We're speaking with Bob Clifford of Clifford Law Offices here in Chicago. He's no stranger to lawsuits against aviation companies, against Boeing themselves. When we come back, your calls, 312-981-7200. Also, I want to ask Bob, Anna, we were talking about this off the air, about them announcing, Malaysian Airlines announcing this plane definitely crashed when they don't have that. And why is that? Maybe Bob can enlighten us on whether the changing of this from a rescue mission to a recovery mission, how that changes things looking forward and how he sees these things playing out over the next couple of years. 312-981-7200. Matt and Anna in for Bob and Marianne, 720 WGN. Anna DeVlantes and Matt Bubala in for Bob and Marianne here on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Bob Clifford from Clifford Law. ClifordLaw.com is Bob's website, and he is no stranger to aviation accidents and having to work in the area and field of lawsuits and just this type of thing. Bob, I know it's got to be tough to work in this all the time. My next question for you, I guess, would be, the Malaysian prime minister, I believe it was, is the one who came out and said, you know, from the way we've looked at the data, we will confirm now that this flight ended in the Indian Ocean. And did you think that was jumping the gun, or is there a particular reason they would do that before they've been able to confirm or find any wreckage? Is that just about trying to give families some closure, or is that about switching from a rescue mission to a recovery mission?
You know, it's any of those things. I mean, the fact is that there is no hard proof yet about that, with one qualifier, and we talked about this in the very beginning of this search, that there's not as much transparency you know, in Indonesia, and, you know, that we have and are accustomed to here in our democracy. And, you know, it's one of the things that makes us the great nation that we are. We expect, you know, fair and proper and appropriate answers from our government. And Malaysia has been criticized for that, that they didn't share information. The Chinese are going nuts. So the surmise is that the prime minister made a judgment call that, you know, based on the data that they do have, we know that the plane could not find an airport anywhere in the region that they suspect it was traveling, that it would run out of fuel. And so it's probably a fair surmise. But, you know, that's different than, of course, the causes. And the problem with, of course, all the causes is that not all of them add up under any circumstances, whether it's a problem with a pilot who might have been committing suicide, like Silk Air, or it might be a problem with a defect in the plane itself. It might have been hijacked. It might have been a computer failure. So, you know, all of those things, if you look at them, none of them make sense to, you know, I mean, very seasoned, you know, aviation investigators.
Bob, we're talking with Bob Clifford from Clifford Law Offices. What, let's say the scenario happens that we don't ever find this plane. And it, in past cases, we've seen where it has taken years to find the debris from plane crashes. At what point in a court of law can you treat this as you know, the ultimate situation where these passengers have died?
Well, understand that under global law, there's a thing called the Montreal Convention that is going to control the rights of the passengers and their families against Malaysia Airlines. That's different than, and is not applicable to, a third party, whether it's Boeing, a component part manufacturer, or some such thing like that. But I've seen reports where people are saying, hey, there could be millions and millions of dollars paid out here. Frankly, I don't buy it. And neither do some of my colleagues who are in the same area of practice. Under the Montreal Convention, which pertains to international flights, the treaty limits the compensation. You know, roughly speaking, it goes up to about $175,000. There are economic incentives that could be beyond that, but precious few. And in the absence of evidence that establishes a claim against Boeing or some other defendant, third-party defendant, these cases will never hit a U.S. courtroom, let alone, millions of dollars being paid out. The families, there's a Texas family, as I understand it, and maybe a couple of others that have a connection to the U.S. Those people may well be able to litigate their claims against Malaysia in a federal court in San Francisco, L.A., maybe Chicago, maybe New York. A lot depends upon where Malaysia Airlines flies in and out of, where they have co-chairing agreements and the like. And those claims could be filed, but they nevertheless are going to be controlled by the limitations placed on the Montreal Convention. And, you know, it's one of the things that's unique about that law. You can have a domestic crash that involves the Montreal Convention. We just saw it in the Buffalo case, the Colgan case, where there were people on that plane who were returning from overseas, and because their tickets were purchased with an international component, and they were returning from that, the Montreal Convention overtook their claims against the airline. We saw that in the Roselawn crash, which was October 31, 1994, against American Airlines. There were some people there who had tickets. They were on their way back to Sweden and to Scotland and to England. Those claims were controlled by the Montreal Convention as well. And it's a very limiting piece of law.
So many questions here. Bob Clifford, we really appreciate your time. And I always want to say one more thing personally about Bob. He is a rock star attorney, but he also gives back in a big way. And I've been involved in several charity organizations, including the Pride and Joy of the Greek Community, the Hellenic Museum. And you very graciously gave your time amongst the best legal minds in the city to come and do the trial of Socrates and some other things. So I thank you for that
and everything you do.
It's
very kind of you. Don't we have a big weekend coming up?
Oh, it is Greek Independence Day. Thank you for mentioning it. Okay, I'm the MC of the parade since we're giving out plugs. Are you going to be there, Bob, for any reason?
No, afraid not. Not this time.
Well, thank you for giving your time to the museum.
Sure thing.
Thanks for talking to us.
Bye-bye.
Bob Clifford of Clifford Law Offices, cliffordlaw.com. Matt and Anna in for Bob and Marianne, 720 WGN.